Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series 4 of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. For now though, sit back, relax, and let's take things from here. This week, I am joined by Delon Canterbury, founder and CEO at Geriatrics. Delon, I was always keen to make sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I'm assuming that is right because you've not pulled me up on it yet.
Yup, you got it, man. You got it. Delon is right. How you been doing?
Yes, very well. Thank you, Delon. And look, it's great to have you on. And I guess I've given you a brief intro there. And I feel like I've been somewhat stalking you on LinkedIn at times with some of the content you've been putting out there. But look, for our audience, could you give us a quick overview of yourself and what Geriatrics is all about as a business?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a board certified geriatric pharmacist, but I'm the founder of geriatrics.org, where we believe our senior patients are over-medicated, and we aim to reduce medication use within this very same population by helping families get their loved ones back using de-prescribing. So we believe in safely removing harmful meds that may not be needed. And unfortunately, about 275,000 people die each year just because of mismanaged medications alone. So this is an international problem. It's not just here in the States. It's everywhere. This is an issue with our seniors. So I am on a mission to train and coach passionate clinicians on how to spot harmful meds in our senior population.
So what does that mismanaged medication, what does that look like? I get the sense from, I guess, where you say describe, that's reducing things. But yeah, what sort of things typically come up? And more to point, why is that coming up?
it's such a multi-layered issue. With our seniors particularly, our bodies just don't work the same as we age, okay? The way we clear drugs don't work the same. The side effect profile isn't the same. We're more sensitive. So the medicines that we use may have been appropriate 15, 20 years ago, but now it no longer may be. But the problem with our system is we don't question meds that people were on for years. We kind of just, oh, you've been on it? Great.
Yeah.
So what people end up doing is just repeating and repeating stuff that was maybe meant for a acute, you know, sprain on the knee, right? Or, you know, you had an infection and you still have leftover pills, whatever. But ultimately, we don't use meds to the top of their abilities. We kind of use them loosely and carelessly. And with seniors, you may have an issue here with your stomach that leads to a side effect, and suddenly that's being treated with another pill. So this is called the prescribing cascade, where essentially one medicine is treating another side effect and another side effect, and it goes on and on. So there are a number of reasons why this happens, but we just aren't trained in our health system to think about the timeline of medicines and when to stop and when to really support more lifestyle changes and diet and exercise.
So it's a case of just encouraging or prompting or nudging these physicians to, I guess, not be lazy or in that comfort zone effectively, because it's not a one size fits all. That's the message, right?
It's not one size fits all. And unfortunately, you know, it's the environment that our prescribers are forced to work under. You know, it's not really all their fault. It's just they aren't exactly incentivized, or at least they don't see the reason why, or they see it, but don't have the ability to get some of their patients off. And they know that the patients are coming in sometimes with a mindset of, I need to have a pill. You know, so they're also battling against our cultural, we want things quick, we want things fast. So there has to be a whole rephrasing of our medication mindset from the patient and the prescriber. And And the prescriber only has like 15, 20 minutes to even see you and then catch you in 6 months, at least here in the US. So it's not as easy to get seen. So of the list of things they have to do, deprescribing medicines may not be on the top of that list for our seniors.
I see. So when did this idea come about? When did the company start? So geriatrics. So that's what you're doing. You're trying to educate clinicians on describing seniors, etc.
Right.
When did this idea come about? How did you get involved in this space?
Well, unfortunately, it came from a pretty rough place of seeing so many patients over-medicated working at Walgreens or Boots Alliance, I guess.
Yeah.
But Walgreens, essentially, we're here in the U.S., we thrive on people taking more meds because your pharmacy makes more money.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a part of the problem, essentially. I was basically letting things go, even though I may not have had clinical acumen, or just I got to a point where I was so numb to try to catch all the issues. You just ended up just lowering your urgency threshold. And so it doesn't mean people are just dying. It just meant, I know this is an issue clinically, but it's like, I don't have the time. I don't have the ability to make that intervention every time, every day. Again.
Oh, something went wrong. Please try again.
All right. So that inspired me. But really what hurt the most was seeing so many seniors, Black seniors, Latino seniors, all coming to my pharmacy with tons of meds who can't afford them. And a lot of the issues they came could have been addressed had someone talked to them before they got to a pharmacy. And that's what lit a fire in me to be that advocate and start geriatrics and really just provide that concierge approach to care that I think was lacking.
Wow. So that's, and how did you even get into the pharmacy world? So that's how you've pivoted to what you're doing now. I mean, what was your background prior to that? I mean, had you always planned to go down that route? I mean, clearly you didn't plan to go down this route. It was just, I'm guessing, that build up. But what was your background prior to all of this?
It was, honestly, I have a Caribbean family. My family's from Guyana, South America.
Uh-huh.
And my parents basically were natural herbalists. They knew what every plant did for any remedy or ailment or food. And that really sparked an interest in understanding natural medicine, right? And how to heal people with plants and the evidence behind healing people with plants. Because, you know, most of our drugs actually come from plants. So that always had me interested in healing and getting into the nerdy science part.
Mm-hmm.
So that sparked my interest in pharmacy since about middle school. And that's been my dream. Wow.
It's now followed through to where it is now. And look, yes. I guess in terms of geriatrics then, so do you remember, I mean, was there one specific moment where you said, you know what, I'm going to go do this? What was going through your head at that point? Because look, there's probably tons of other people out there who are in a situation where they're thinking, hey, I'm in a, you know, I've got into a bit of a rut, you know, it's almost, I'm becoming desensitized to what I'm doing, but they don't necessarily know how to make that change. So can you remember what prompted you and what you were thinking at that point?
Sure. Nah, for me, it was pretty rough beginning. I started this company in 2020 and truthfully, what led to it finally getting off the ground was being fired in the middle of COVID. Wow. So I worked as a poison control pharmacist, right? And we ended up becoming the COVID call center for North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up nodding off at my desk because we were so overworked. I nodded off at my desk for about 5 minutes and got fired, right? I literally left a job for like a 40K pay cut to take this new job and then be fired within 4 months. So this was the last time I let someone else control my fate or dictate how I can move or operate or serve.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't serving in the capacity that I felt my license as a pharmacist wanted me to do. So that was the final sign to say, you know what, this was a kick in the butt. I needed to just advocate. And so I just started doing all types of random things in the senior community and try to figure out, okay, how do I make this a business? How do I make this grow? How do I scale? And that's how I ended up being here today. And our first patient was someone who was on 36 medications, who was about to be forced into a nursing home. So we were able to deprescribe her down to 8 medications and keep her from being forced into a nursing home.
So look, this is interesting. So, I mean, it's pretty recent. 2020 is when you kicked off, and kind of as a result of COVID. I mean, how did you go about forming the business? For those who might be looking to do something similar, how did you go about forming the business? Was it just yourself? Did you have any partners, any investors? What did it literally look like on day one? I mean, was it like me when I started Huxley Morton, where I was kind of in my spare bedroom, you know, making calls around the world? You know, how did it look for you?
It looked like a complete struggle, but it was also, for me, it was so freeing to not only verbalize and start speaking to the problem of over-medicating, but it was starting to see that people were listening, like the community was listening, like they were asking for more info on how to do or how to get into this space. But I struggled. I didn't expect to be fired. So I ended up having some savings I dipped into some for my work as a pharmacy manager.
Yeah.
So I had some assets I could use to support myself during this tough time. But no, I mean, I didn't have any angel investors or funders or seed money. I am very much still a solopreneur. There are certain things I contract out.
Yeah.
But you know, it wasn't easy, and it still is an interesting puzzle every day. But it's been the most rewarding. I have the most happiest I've ever been in my life. I have a better quality of life. I have freedom, and I'm serving in a way where I know my patients will always bat for me and reach out for me if any questions come up with anything.
Amazing. So you're enjoying that work-life balance, and that's one of the things that I set up our business for. It's kind of, you know, was making good money working in the city, but it just wasn't for me anymore. And look, you mentioned there that, I mean, quite open about the fact it looked like a struggle and a challenge. Look, I've certainly been there, continue to have struggles and challenges, really. It's never an easy ride. What is there any standout ones that you think, you know, that was a rough ride or a rough patch that you're happy to kind of share? And I mean, yeah, kind of talk us through that.
Yeah, for me, in the beginning of my business, there had to be a really significant mindset shift for me to start getting comfortable in being in the unknown. And for me, I learned that I was very impatient with myself and with the progress of where I was. Even for the season I was in, I just didn't have any grace and I didn't have any patience at all. Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of suffer a bit of an ego death in the beginning, which for those who don't know is basically this existential crisis where you kind of kill off your old self to become the new.
Right.
So that had to happen. And it took me, unfortunately, burning out in my first year because I wasn't managing my energy very well. One, so to be honest with you, I was just so excited that I was just sleeping 3 to 4 hours and then I'd wake up at 6 and then just put stuff all over social media and just keep, I would do it every day. Like I did that for months. And I was like, my girlfriend at the time was like, you're going to burn yourself out. I didn't believe. I was like, oh, it's fun. I'm having fun. It's my job. But no, I did burn myself out, in fact, twice, and had to take like 2 months off. So that just basically my body told me you need to just relax and shut down. And I had to learn that early, which was energy management and then level setting my expectations for myself for where I am in the business. It's not going to happen.
Well, it sounds like that's some serious hours that you are putting in there. And I guess, look, it gets tempting to do so. And I'm sure there's other entrepreneurs out there that are doing that as we speak. So look, to anyone like that, that perhaps listening, I guess, slightly off topic from the geriatric story, but like, what advice would you give to them as someone that's been there and had to take a couple of months off? What advice would you maybe give to them individuals that are doing what, you know, in that place where you've been?
I do recommend checking out a coach or having someone who can at least talk through some of those rough patches. It's just good to be associated with someone who understands the space, you know? And I think you really just can't take for granted having someone as a listening ear while you're in the trenches. So
yeah,
in the beginning, get yourself a business bestie or accountability partner or something, and see it as more of a game if you can. Yes, it's a game where you will also make money, but try to see it as more of a playful, fun thing to add to your day than another chore, because you didn't leave your job just for another job. You know, you left your job for a lifestyle. So I've emphasized having some patience with yourself and having some grace, and I would recommend hiring a coach.
Yeah. So is that something that you've now done then? Have you kind of taken your own advice? Have you gone out and sought a coach, a mentor, or kind of an individual that you can bounce ideas off, et cetera?
Yeah, I've had to, in order to stop feeling so scattered and find a bit of a compass and where I was going. So yeah, I've had couple of coaches, multiple coaches, spiritual coach, life coach, pharmacist coach,
wow,
but sales coach. They all help. They all have been integral, and I think they fast tracked where I'm heading instead of wasting more time trying to figure it out on my own.
Yeah, no, I think it's probably one of the biggest hacks out there, isn't it? Is to find someone that's been where you've been or done what you're looking to do, and kind of just ask them, say, how does this work?
Right.
So yeah, smart move. And I guess coming back to the geriatrics story and kind of how things have gone from the beginning, I mean, how do things look now, DeLon, you know, in terms of if you were to give us a snapshot of the current situation at present?
Things are phenomenal. This has been the best year for me. I'm getting more paid public speaking engagements. I'm getting more referrals. Our coaching program is going super well with our de-prescribing accelerator.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been honestly monumental in expanding my reach. In fact, yeah, we just had a cohort who did medication reviews as a part of UF Health System. And they basically have a medication team of community health workers that reduce heart failure rates in people who just left the hospital. So it was an honor being able to teach them some of the things to look out for using a pharmacist lens, and so that they can go and advocate. And when they're having these talks with patients, they can, you know, identify some potentially problematic meds. Mm-hmm. So I feel like some of the sweat equity that I put in is starting to come to bear. But things are coming more naturally, I will say. So the things are looking good. I do anticipate us maybe having a podcast like yourself in the very near future, and maybe even having a TV show. So there's plenty in the works with where we're going with geriatrics, and I envision it having an international impact very soon.
Wow, sounds like some big plans there. So yeah, no, I'll certainly be wishing you the best of luck with that. And I think, look, one of the stories I wanted to bring up was something that I had seen from yourself on LinkedIn. I can't remember exactly what it was. I think you were overseas somewhere, and it was a post about, like, I never thought, you know, if you asked me 18 months ago, I wouldn't be closing a deal like this, you know.
Sure.
Like, Talk us through that, because look, you know, everyone normally shares, you know, particularly on LinkedIn, the struggle. But I love hearing about the success stories. And when I saw that, I think that it was at that point that I shot you a message and said, look, DeLon, I don't know what this is all about, but I'd love to learn more. Talk to me about that little success story, because look, I love a win. I love
Yes. So I, yeah, that post was when I was in Istanbul, in Turkey,
it.
literally outside the Hagia Sophia. And I was there for a wedding for a classmate. And as a part of my deprescribing accelerator, we solidified our second cohort, right? So that happened while I was in Turkey. And so I taught part of that class in Turkey. You know, I had to find an outlet and an adapter. It's a whole different world and different wattage, but I was able to land, or at least get my check or for payment for five figures while I was there in coaching and teaching deprescribing into this very same team I mentioned, that UF Health, the MedWing team. So that was rewarding because, you know, traditionally we just see pharmacists behind the bench working 9 to 5. They stand all day, don't even get bathroom breaks. And for me to make more money and then have more of an impact while I'm overseas just proved to me that I can do this internationally and make this the business model, which it is currently now, is getting more people passionate about stopping harmful meds in seniors. So that was the big win that happened in Turkey. And traditionally here, you're just not going to see many pharmacists who can do that, or at least would think to do that. And that's why it was such a fulfilling moment for me.
So look, in terms of I guess like all the coaching, the training, the advice that you are giving to these physicians and I guess your clients, how does this link into I guess typically what we talk about on the show, which is I guess clinical research, clinical studies. Does this the whole prescribing over prescribing decent prescribing, how does that link in?
Yeah, it links in perfectly. So what we teach in our course is evidence-based. So we are using clinical trials, we're using clinical evidence and translating that into actionable steps for your business, for you, for your business, for your patients. So we use evidence-based there. But what is exciting about this field is that there are more and more grant opportunities that focus on putting in this type of work. So it's not just something that's just brand new. There are literally health systems that specialize in doing this day in, day out. And they focus on value-based care, which is where our health system needs to be. It's hard to make it happen, but when we start talking about the value and showing how we are stopping those hospitals from having readmission rates increase, where we're stopping patients from having repeated heart attacks and strokes because we're better managing their meds. Those are the metrics that hit the bottom dollar for the patient, but also for the health system and the taxpayer, as we're paying for insurance and Medicare here in the US. So the evidence is there. We only use evidence-based models. And I mean, we cite pilot studies from the Veterans Association here, the Veteran Affairs here. We've used trials from Europe, from Canada, from Australia, all looking at deprescribing. So there's not only evidence that substantiates what we're doing, but there's more new evidence as we speak that's coming out in this field.
Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Well, no, it's amazing that you had that win while over for a friend's wedding as well. What a nice little bonus that must have been. And not I guess you've already talked about kind of potentially starting a podcast, potentially getting a TV show. What would you say is next for geriatrics as a business? At the moment it sounds like it's still mainly yourself, you outsource a few things, but is there any other plans for further expansion, innovation? What's next for you guys?
Yeah, that's a great point. I foresee us contracting like-minded pharmacists and nurses and social workers in the future. And we are essentially going to have a national presence here. So there'll be a hub of geriatrics consultants. I essentially see us being a healthcare consulting company where we do it for you or we teach you how to do it. And so I'm building an army of international deprescribers. So we will have hubs in every state, but also we'll be able to expand and hopefully provide affordable housing for our seniors. So one of my goals is to basically create a fund or nonprofit from geriatrics where it's solely focused on affordable housing for low income or no income or displaced people in our country who are over 60.
Wow. And what sort of time scale do you have in mind for that? Delight? It sounds like a big plan.
That's like my 5 to 10 year plan. But the immediate plan is to expand, have a presence in every state, train people in de-prescribing, and then have them go forth into the community and just train more people. And the more we train, I see this being put in pharmacy schools, in nursing schools, in medical schools, because they don't get this training in medical schools. So getting people to think, look, our aging population is only getting older and no one is helping them. Like, we don't have enough people to meet the demand to help this aging group. So keep that in mind. You're going to have opportunities come at you left and right.
Amazing stuff. Well, I know that I've been, as I say, following you on LinkedIn for some time. I recommend any of our audience to go and check you out as well. I know you do some pretty cool stuff on there. But look, before we let you go, I always finish up the show with a quick fire questions round. So in true Huxley Morton podcast fashion, I'll do the same with yourself, and I'll kick us off there with my first question. And that is about the one piece of advice that you'd perhaps give to your younger self, DeLon.
For me, I would say don't think you know it all, you know, like just don't think you know it all. Just for me, I just thought I knew it all. I didn't want to ask for help. So it took me again having that ego death before I started realizing it takes a team to build a business.
Mm-hmm.
You can sell a product or figure it out on your own, but it really, you're gonna have to rely on people to make it work. So have a little more grace and patience with my younger self. And don't beat myself up for things not happening too quickly.
Awesome. And ask for help. Solid advice. And look, I guess my next question is kind of along the same lines, but is there a number one book or resource that you would perhaps recommend, whether it's just for our audience in general or whether it's, you know, this down that personal development road?
Sure. I think the 12-week year is a great book. Think and Grow Rich is also helpful. There's a book called Switch. That's also a nice start. And I also like, what's it, the 12-week year? What's the other one? Not a 12-week year, but what else do I like? I forget. But there's also, I recommend podcasts as well. Like, I think books are great and sometimes people are a little more active. So having a podcast or audiobook while you're working. I started listening to like entrepreneurial business minded podcasts and starting to learn different things. Just keep your mind open. That's going to help you get to the next level.
Cool. And it doesn't sound like you're not quite there in terms of bringing on all of your consultants, but it certainly sounds like there is big plans. So what would you rate as the top three qualities that you value most when trying to build a team? Sounds like you've perhaps done it previously, but you know, for your own business now.
Sure. You want people that are passionate. You want to build an environment where people trust you and you can build a relation with, and they have the same desire as you. So it's like you're dating someone. You want to have someone that's a partner, a life partner. So you want someone that balances your weaknesses. You know, if I'm not good at strategic mapping, you're going to want someone who's going to be good at that to offset, you know, your skills that you lack in. So I would say loyalty, trust, and passion, you know, are the main ones I look for.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are in it for something greater than just a paycheck, those are the ones who go to bat for you. So
awesome stuff. Look, we've talked kind of a lot about work and kind of the good work that you're doing to help seniors, etc. But when you do get some downtime, if you're not going straight back into work, that is, what do you do to relax? You know, what's your favorite thing outside of work?
For me, I'm a gamer. So I literally like to play PC games and play shooters. But my more favorite hobby recently has been playing the cello. So I'm a huge cello fan.
Wow.
So I've been kind of practicing and teaching myself how to play. So that's been my biggest hobby to date.
How's that going?
Fantastic, fantastic. It's great. I was just playing some before we got on, so it's
Brilliant
more than
stuff.
a
I was
skill.
not expecting that one. It's a first. It's a first alarm. Not had that one before. And look, to close the show, a bit of a deeper one here. And that is, look, finally, what would you say is your number one golden rule for both life and business?
Just serve other people and the money will come.
Awesome. Short and sweet. I like that. Perfect. Well, look, Delon, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Look, as I said several times, I have been following you on LinkedIn for a while, but in terms of for anyone that wants to learn more about you, your journey, geriatrics, what is the best place for our audience and our network to reach out to yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm all over LinkedIn. You can always find me at geriatrics.org, GERIATRX as in X-ray.org, and I'll be there. But I'm also all over LinkedIn. So you can find me there, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find me at geriatrics, GERIATRX, or just search my name, Delon Canterbury. But yeah, happy to meet you anywhere. LinkedIn's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me.
Good man. Well, look, we'll get you all tagged up and look, thanks again for being part of the Huxley Morton podcast.
Awesome. Take care.